This is 1360 AM.
WNJC. Washington Township. Philadelphia. Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station. Brought to you from Forsyth Broadcasting. Or listen to us at WNJCRadio.com.
This is a Will Hemingway Productions presentation. All recordings are copyrighted. Copyright 2017. Will Hemingway. All rights reserved. Any duplication must be approved by the creator. Please visit practicepreparedness.com to obtain permission and find other materials. Welcome. This is your host, Will Hemingway, and you are listening to the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. No tinfoil hats. No ranting rhetoric, just simple, stoic, thoughtful enlightenment designed to help you adopt a healthy, life-changing, proactive preparedness mindset. No fear, no chaos. Built from a calm, risk management, loss prevention perspective. Survival is every day. Being prepared will allow you to live well and contented. The Practice Preparedness Radio Show is broadcast live every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. That is 1800 to 1900 hours Eastern Time on WNJC 1360 AM in the Philadelphia, Delaware Valley area. You can also listen live via the internet and replay all of the previous shows from the practicepreparedness.com website. As Agatha Christie's great Belgian detective Hercule Poirot would say,
in the little gray cells of the brain lies the solution of every mystery.
We would like to stimulate your little gray cells in order to create a proactive survival preparedness mindset for you. Let's get started. This is Will Hemingway, and you are listening to the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. A brief programming note. If you visit the website to stream or download the show, you will notice our new format. The show is recorded in five segments: a 3-minute introductory opening, 3 17-minute feature segments, and a 3-minute closing. They are designed so that you will be able to download the show as one single file or in its segments to simplify playing back when you have limited time. The feature segments will explore three focused individual topics. I hope that you enjoy the new format. If you have suggestions or constructive comments, please feel free to use one of the feedback forms on each of the pages on practicepreparedness.com. Today's feature segments will focus on three topics. Segment one will focus on the idea of self-sufficiency, taking it one step at a time. No one should have the idea that they can be 100% self-sufficient. It is just not attainable. The idea is to approach self-sufficiency from the idea of cutting the cord from dependency, from codependency. These things have become hallmarks of the modern Western world. If you look back 100 years, or if you look currently in a third world nation, the people there are almost free, unless they live in an urban environment, of this codependency nature. When you look at them, you will find that they are more than prepared, way more than most Western modern cultures are, to succeed and survive in a difficult crisis or problem that is presented to them, even the smallest ones. They will always be better prepared because they are used to being self-sufficient. They are not dependent, and they are staunch individualists who fight to work and get what they need at all cost, with very little whimpering and very little whining. This is crucial, because if you don't get past this, you will fail in a survival situation. So self-sufficiency becomes the goal. Never 100% attained, always the driving force. Segment two will be targeting kit culture, something I created about 20 years ago when I began training people in the investigative field. The idea is taken from how the military works. There is not a single process that the military personnel do that there is not a kit to help them do, and to do it efficiently. Each kit, well marked, well identified, Wolf completed, is ready at the hand to be taken and utilized in order to effect the end necessary for any task that they're presented with. Segment 3, targeting an area that I'm always interested in, is the ability to discern fact from fiction. In this modern day, with the inundation of all of the electronic data and communications, it has become simpler and more difficult at the same time, depending upon your skill set which you develop, to be able to tell the difference between the truth and falsity, between things that have been manipulated but may be true, taken out of context, or that of absolute fact. So we'll be getting into that too. Self-sufficiency is not attainable in its absolute form. That said, like anything else in life, it doesn't mean that you don't shoot for it. It just means that you don't get disappointed or upset that you can't obtain it in completion. That's reality. Everyone will need some help at some point. Sometimes when you need it, you won't get it. That can be very destructive and sometimes life-ending or life-changing. The key is to make sure that you have taken every effort possible to never be in the position where, had you had the effort taken, had you taken the time to prepare yourself, that you wouldn't need that help. That's really the beginning of the focus of self-sufficiency. Look at it from the perspective of today's modern Western culture. People spend 4 hours in one day of pay to pay for getting their nails done while they have a hard time stocking food in their refrigerator or paying their basic bills. What reality does that have? What does that say about how we are taught about being an individual, about being self-sufficient, about being dependent or codependent? This is critical. Today's modern Western societies have been steeped in the premise of codependent living. It is a wonder and a boon for nanny state governments who want you to depend upon them to save you. But for you, from a personal standpoint and a personal survival standpoint, this is a disaster. Begin today by starting to erase those lessons and replace them with strong individualistic tendencies. I'm not talking turn into a hermit or into the Unabomber. I'm talking about working to make yourself capable of taking care of those things that are important to you, to your daily survival, without needing to depend upon others. There are a lot of things that you can do, and one of the first ones that I would suggest is to look at disconnecting yourself from the grocery store. Now, for most people, you won't have the stomach for what it takes to do that completely, and may not have the time or the desire to. But anything that you do to move yourself in that direction can save your life sometimes when you have a situation that occurs that you did not expect. The bottom line is that as you start out small, whether it is sprouting sprouts or growing your herbs on your kitchen table, you can place a grow light up underneath of your kitchen cabinet or get one on a stand and place it on your kitchen table or somewhere else. Put some plants into some pots, even go buy some or plant some seeds and grow them there. You can grow basil and thyme and oregano, and you can grow cilantro and lots of other herbs right there on your counter. Granted, you're not going to live or die based upon those items growing on your counter. But what you will do is develop skills and understanding and knowledge of what it takes to nurture a plant from seed to full growth and be able to feel what it feels like when you harvest from what you grew and how that will change the way you live. It's amazing. These are not things that you want to have to try to learn at the height of a crisis. You can plant a tomato plant in a 5 or a 10 gallon pot outside your door or on your deck or your rear patio. You can even put one by your front door and let it grow. Get one that is an indeterminate, or you could get a determinate, which is a bush type, and put it in the pot, put a stake or a big bamboo stick or something in it, and tie it up to it and let it grow up. If you really want to get some quick results, try Sweet 100s. You will be amazed at the number of tomatoes. They're small cherry tomatoes. They are great tasting. You can use them in salads. Are you going to live off of them? Absolutely not. But you will get the feel for what it is to grow your own food, and then you can take it from there in the next year. You can use what the Russians did and plant potatoes. Try a 10-gallon container, or get yourself a trash can, a plastic, round plastic trash can. Drill some holes in it, throw some soil in it and some cardboard and some wood chips or some mulch. Put a few eyes that are growing from your potatoes in there and have at it. You will be amazed at how easy it is. 3 months later, you can flip over the container onto a tarp, roll it around a little bit, and easily run your fingers through it and find a whole pile of potatoes that you have grown. You can grow your tomatoes on the pot. And then if you have to move, if you live in an apartment, you can still do it there. Try creating edible landscapes. You can do edible landscape where you can plant kale as a second layer behind some flowers along the front of your house or at your entrance. You can put them in window containers hanging out of a second story apartment. There are so many options. If you don't have a window planter and you want to have one, try getting some plastic rain gutters. Rain gutter is amazing, and it's simple, as very, very simple. You would never believe. Lowe's has a brand that's called Genova, and they come in a 5.5 inch by 10 foot section, half round gutters. They're only $4.19. You get them and a few ends, drill a few holes so the water can go out, fill them up with a bag of potting soil, plant some seeds in there, and in no time, if you put it in a shaded area, you will have lettuce growing, or if you want to put it into a sunny area, you can grow all kinds of things that you would never believe. And you can hang that with a few brackets that I'm sure that you could work out with the people working at your local Lowe's or Home Depot or whatever home store that you have in your area, that you can hang it off of your windowsill, close the window, and it'll lock it in, and you're good to go. Open the window, and boom, out the window, you stick your hand, grab what you're going to harvest, and you're good. This is an important set of skills that will grow not only your skill set, but your mentality toward becoming more self-sufficient. The average person gets their food from the grocery store, and at least 50%, in many cases 80 to 90%, depending upon the time of year, comes from a place as many as 10 or 15,000 miles away from your home. Don't do that. Find a way to grow some of what you have and what you use at home, because if you ever need those skills, you will already have a jump start on it. You will already understand the watering and the soil issues, drainage, and a lot of other things that become really critical. Do yourself a favor. Disconnect from the grocery store as much as possible. You can go the next source and learn how to store food and buy it in bulk. Get it from local farmers, join the hunting club, even if you don't hunt, and buy meat from them when the members hunt and get deer in season or whichever they're hunting for at the time. Learn how to store food without refrigeration in Mylar bags with oxygen absorbers. It is another step in a big picture. Doesn't take a lot of equipment, doesn't require a vacuum sealer, though I do highly recommend having one of them. All of these things give you the opportunity to take it to the next step so that when you do have food, you can store it well, safely, for long-term usage. That's the goal. Learn how to dehydrate your food in your home, and then you don't have to refrigerate that food. You can put it into a Mylar bag with an oxygen absorber, seal the bag up, and put it away in a dark, cool place, and mark it so that you can use it later, and voila, you start moving towards creating yourself long-term storage. As many of you have heard me say plenty of times before, nix the MREs, nix the things like Wise and others. They're great in short-term stints, but what you really want are things that you know that you will eat, that you would normally eat, that you have now taken and put away so that you can use them. It's really crucial. Another thing to consider is sourcing protein. Learn how to fish. You can get your own meat. Make a fish pond in your backyard, in that dip in the backyard that constantly floods. Put in a fish pond, build it up so now the flooding goes away. Put some growth around it that will absorb and suck in that moisture that would normally be flooding, and then you can eat the fish. Learn to hunt. Go with your friends when they go hunting. Even if you don't go hunting, you don't own a gun or you don't own a bow, you can still go with them, learn, watch, experience it, see what it takes. Start keeping rabbits or get three hens. Make sure that you check your local township for the ordinances and rules and regulations so that you don't get yourself in trouble. It's a growing thing. Now, a growing movement in the United States going around, especially in urban and suburban towns that had previously banned them, they're beginning to come in and change the ordinances to allow small farm animal type things with the smaller livestock like hens, and some of them are even allowing goats. Check your local ordinances before you get there. Get experiences in the challenge that face you when you raise your own meat. Waste disposal and handling are big things. People don't realize that on a situation, on a grid down situation in survival, even your own waste handling becomes a problem. Get to know the tactics and means that you can do to handle the waste from animals that you keep for meat and for yourself. Learn about feed costs and sources outside of going to the store when there may not be one, and so it's less costly. Health issues for taking care of the animals and what to do to handle them, like worming and more. Really, really important to get that down now. Incorporate a pond, look at that, look at what happens, learn about what it takes to keep your local neighborhood cats from coming and feasting on your food in your pond. I had already touched on learning to sprout. Most people don't realize that when you sprout, you are growing sprouts. If you do mung beans or alfalfa, they are very, very high in protein. You can do them in 5 to 7 days, enough to give yourself several days worth of normal protein intake. All of these things are simple and effective means to move into what you need to do, which is to learn to be more self-sufficient. It is silly when you look at the fact that many people spend 4 hours in one day working and take the time, the money that they get from those 4 hours to go out and pay for getting their nails done or for going to go to see a ball game or a concert when they have not yet expended effort and time on the basic things that you need to survive to get to that point, and they don't even see the correlation. They work because they're taught. You work because you need things. You need things because you work, and because you work, you need things. That's not the way it should work. This is about breaking the bonds with the modern Western culture's mentality of being codependent and dependent upon society. And most importantly, to break the trend of being a consumerist. I'm not saying you're not going to go to the store and get things. Obviously, you're going to want a TV and you're going to want a car and you're going to want the things that make those things work. What I'm talking about is being realistic, moving more towards a minimalist approach where those things don't matter, where the things that do matter are the things that directly relate to your day-to-day survival and your security. But more importantly, those two things, security and safety, step into the path of stability. You want to build stability for yourself. If you are always chasing after the newest, greatest, latest thing and having to work extra hours or fight to get a better job because you need more money in order to get those things, you will be very disappointed because you will never attain that. You need to think very clearly. And I know if you're listening that you're smarter than the average bear, because most people don't want to be bothered. They'd rather argue over how many balls and strikes someone threw or how many hits and outs they did. We're talking about things that hit the ground where it counts. All those things are fine once you've taken care of yourself and those that you love. Once again, stick with the premise that you want to start looking at adjusting the way you live in order to take in living from the basis of what you can do for yourself and those who count to you. Don't leave to others what you can do yourself. It will always be a better result for you and much more satisfying. In addition, in the event of a serious crisis, you won't have anyone else that you may be able to turn to. So even if you're not the best at it, being able to do it, having done it before, and understanding that process will always yield you a better result and help you to remain more calm, focused, and in charge. That will do it for this segment. This is segment 2, kit culture. Kits are a linchpin to survival. It is the ability. Segment 2, kit culture. A linchpin to survival is the ability to respond accurately, effective, and reliably to crisis, large and small, with little to no stress and in a managed and thoughtful manner. Making kits and personally tailoring them to your needs and tastes can greatly aid your path to that end. Let's take a simple day-to-day life experience. You cut your finger. You're bleeding. Maybe you have pain. You're trying to press something on the wound to stay the bleeding. If you don't have a kit ready, stocked, and in hand, you're running around with basically no hands, trying to find the Neosporin, bandages, means to clean the wound. The results are rarely positive in that situation. If you are on the job, maybe you're lucky enough to have a medical kit. Do you know where it is? Is it well stocked? Is it stocked properly for what you need? If not, what are you going to end up with? Duct tape and a paper towel? Electrical tape and a tissue? My approach is that you take each redundant task in life, separate it out, do it one at a time. If you do this over a period of time, in no time, you will be shockingly prepared and blow away even some of the most well-seasoned preparedness people that you know if you take this tactic. Separate each task out, redundant tasks, analyze the failures and the successes that you've had handling them in the past. What things that it required and the things that you need to fix those problems and to fix them well. Throw them all in a pile. Maybe you make a list first, then you get them and throw them all in a pile. Maybe you already have them all, but they're in disparate locations. Find them, put them in a pile. Find a bag that will allow you to organize those items in a way that you can easily find them and make access to them, where they'll remain dry, clean, and ready for use when you need them. Take the items, separate them into uses, and we're going to use this cut finger, or maybe the broader sense of a first aid kit as an example. So you begin. You have cuts and scratches, open wounds. So you have Neosporin and maybe a small vial of hydrogen peroxide. You have a clean, sterile bottle in its own bag that you can use with clean water to irrigate a large wound. Then you have the Neosporin. You have Band-Aids and gauze and large pads and maybe even quick clot for the really massive wounds and packs and Z-packs and on. Each one of these things all end up together in that area. So you might break that down into minor cuts and wounds and massive wounds, bleeding. Then you look at burns and you look at sprains where you need splints. So maybe you have some tape and some tongue depressors, or better yet, you have the bendable aluminum finger splints that you can buy. Get them that actually fit your fingers, because if you're going to take it out of a standard set, someone like me who has ape paws, the ones that are for their index finger won't even fit my pinky. So you need to prepare your own kit. That's critical. Put each one of them in separate piles. Put them into high-quality freezer bags. Roll them, get the air out, seal them up, and then mark what it is for. This is a minor cut. This is for major bleed. This is for burn. This is for splint. This is for sprain, so forth and so on. I highly recommend having an eyewash bottle with sterile eyewash solution in it and an eye cup that's with it, all sealed in a sterile container. Because if you get something caustic in your eye, you don't have time to say, hey, you know, want to run down the street to Walgreens and get me that eye cup and the sterile flushing solution. Too late. Have it, put it somewhere where it's marked. Someone can reach into the bag, grab it out for you when you can't. These are critical things. So some other kit ideas I'm going to talk about, because I want to lay this out to put it in your mind. Many of you who have been to my classes that I do on kits, I haven't done one in a while. There is one that I'm planning to do coming up. When you lay them out, you have to break it down into sections. So you may not have as much of a feeling of need or importance for one as for another, but there are some that pretty much everyone needs. So, basic survival. Water purification unit, like a Sawyer, preferably a 0.02, but if you're going to have a small kit, you can pick up the 0.1 or 0.2 unit that they sell in Walmart for a very low price. Food supplies. I highly recommend the Datrex, that's D-A-T-R-E-X, Delta Alpha Tango Romeo Echo X-Ray 3600 calorie food bar. It's a pack. They're tasty, they're edible, they're very small, they're freeze-dried food. You can eat it and it will give you 3600 calories per pack. They're very reasonably priced. You can find them on Amazon. They also have SOS survival food bars that are 3,600 calorie. I don't particularly care for the apple cinnamon that they carry in Walmart, but they start around $4 or $5. They're extremely compact, lightweight, and they will save your life. You can keep 10 of them in there, and you would have at least 10 days and way more survival than that. You may not be that happy with eating the same thing all day long every day, but you will certainly not starve to death, and you won't pass out before you get yourself to safety. They are highly recommended items to place in your kit. Then there are some other things. One of the things is the SOS emergency survival tent. They are they're small, they're lightweight, they're easy to use. They look like a tube. They're really, really lightweight. You can get them very reasonably in Walmart and other locations. I highly recommend that. They're crinkly, they make a lot of noise in the wind, but you won't freeze to death and you won't get exposure. And by the way, in the summer, as much as in the winter, you need shelter. If you don't go that route, get yourself a good nylon tarp, lightweight, balls up, folds up really small and tight. One caution. If you're looking in the camping section in places like Walmart or Kmart and other like similar places, you will find some really cool tarps, but some of them are only 5x7. If you're like me and you're over 6 foot tall, 5x7 isn't going to cut it, because once you fold it once, you have shortened the distance end to end, and if that's the case, your feet are going to hang out. So you may need two in order to cover yourself up well, and some paracord to make yourself a basic shelter. But these are things to consider to have in a kit. You can put all of that into an old-fashioned World War II Army shaving kit that's no bigger than 10 by 5. You can find similar pouches that go for about $5 or $6 in Harbor Freight. They go on sale. They're a great deal. They're all small. You can get a white paint pen and write on the outside of the black bag what it is, so that you could have 10 of them stacked up, grab the one you need, and go. You can put some in your car, in your trunk, or in the back of your hatch, whatever your vehicle is, and have them with you. They're easy to identify. Other things that you want to consider also are things like your vehicle kits. Here's the basic premise. You should always have a spare pair of shoes. What if you're out? Most men hopefully aren't going to be out in open-toe shoes. But one way or another, you should have closed-toe shoes that have good tread and are resilient to protect your feet so that you can do hard labor. If you had to climb out of your vehicle and up off of an embankment that you slide off of, if you have to get out into mud or snow, no matter what, they should be sprayed with waterproofing to keep your feet dry. They should be capable of giving you traction when you go to walk. If you're in high heels and you're a woman and you need to get out and do something like change your tire, you don't want to try to do that in spikes. You may get a lot of attention and a lot of offers for help, but it may not be positive in that effect. A set of resilient work gloves. I recommend two. Thick leather welding gloves, because you can use them to grab things that are sharp and things that are jagged and move them around, things like wood and trees and logs, so that you're not going to get torn up. And then you want a set of mechanics gloves that give you dexterity, but you can keep them on. And I'd also recommend some 9mm nitrile gloves. They have endless uses, from in the bathroom or where you're needing to go to bathroom when you don't have the ability to wash your hands after. Lots of reasons that you have that. These go into a kit. Put the shoes sideways in a bag. Seal them up. put your, and by the way, I'd also recommend getting one of those white moon suits. You can get one for about $10, $12 in the painting section. It will keep your clothes clean, but moreover, it can offer you one more layer of protection from dust and all kinds of negative outside attacking things that are going to bother you. So like mosquitoes and whatnot, if you have to work in an area where there's a big infestation, those moon suits are unbelievably useful for that while you're working on your vehicle to get free. Then some sub-kits I want to talk about for a minute, because if you get the feel for this, you can come up with your own ideas. Don't just base them on mine. This is just to kickstart your little gray cells to get you in the direction that it takes to help yourself. So, let's look at the way that we put together and design a kit. Like I said, take any redundant thing, take it apart, look at what was needed, what you didn't have, what someone else offered to save you, and then start. So, let's talk about a dead battery. So, you need a set of good, high-quality, 2-gauge jumper cables. You can find them for a very reasonable price at Tractor Supply. If you go to Napa stores, a lot of times you'll find them there. They should be 20 feet long. If you can find 25 feet long, that's even better. It's about the average length from one battery back behind that car to the broken down car, so that they don't have to turn around on the highway to get to you. They can reach from one spot to the other without moving. I'd also highly recommend the Schumacher brand 1200 amp jump box. They are only $99 in Walmart. It's less money than you'll pay for a good seat at a baseball game or a hockey game. It will save your butt when you're in trouble and certainly give you a level of comfort knowing that if you keep it charged, you can put it in your trunk. And if you have a dead battery, you don't have to wait to beg someone to give you a jump. You can jump out and start your own vehicle with the jump box. It also will have an air compressor, not the greatest one in the world, but it will work. It has a light on it so that you can light the area to see where the battery cables go when you're going to put them on before you do it. All of that should go into a bag. Protect it from being smashed and scraped up. Put it all in one place. So you grab that bag. You say, I have a dead battery. Where's the dead battery bag? Out it comes and you're done. Tire care. You should have a tire gauge, a tire compressor. You should have a plug kit. Talk to your local mechanic or someone that you know who is skilled with vehicles. Get them to look at your tires. Tell them that you want to figure out how to do it. Maybe the guy, you can give him $10 and he'll show you how to use a tire plug in an old throwaway tire that he has at the gas station or the repair shop that you go to. You can get a good high quality kit at places like Advanced Auto Parts and AutoZone. I highly recommend having them. Get an extra tube of the glue, the rubber glue, because people tend to open them and not seal them right, and it dries out. Now you have the patches, but you don't have the glue. It is really easy. I've taught many women and children even to do it, and they can do it successfully. A fluids bag for your vehicle. Put together or a basket. You can buy baskets now that go in the trunk, or grab an old milk crate and plastic milk crate and put the things in there. You should have at least 1 5-quart oil. I would recommend having an oil filter if you ever go off-road or you go where there's lots of stones and potential for damage to the underside of your vehicle. One of the common things is breaking a hole in your oil filter. If you have an oil filter and 5 quarts of oil, you're in good shape. I highly recommend having at least a quart of Lucas oil or Rizlone motor honey. This will take care of a plethora of things. If you get water in your gas, if you have mystery oil or you have sea foam, you can place that into the into the fuel. They have a fuel additive for that, and it helps to take it out. A bottle or two of heat or some other isopropyl alcohol that is made to, they sell it in the winter as a gas line antifreeze. And really what it is that it absorbs and mates with the water in your gas and takes it out so that it doesn't damage your engine and you can drive. Brake fluid is another really important one, because if you end up short, you may be able to just put fluid in order to get safely off the highway to somewhere where you can have help. Remember, even if you don't know what to do with the supply that you have in your kit, you may have someone there who does. Things, for instance, like a broken serpentine belt. That's the end. But if you have a belt and you have someone who says, well, gee, if you had a belt, I would put it on for you. And you say, well, as a matter of fact, I happen to have one in the back. For $25 that you put away, or less, sometimes as low as $10, you may save the day and be off and running. Toss them a couple bucks for putting it on there and you're rocking and rolling. That's what having a kit and being prepared is all about. And each time you encounter a new problem, you learn a new thing that you need to do to tweak that kit, and you adjust the kit, and each time you limit your threat and maximize your survivability rate. That's what kits are all about. Next week, I'm going to talk, if I have time, about personal kits for weather-based and personal kits for your everyday needs when you're mobile. You should have one at home and one in your vehicle, because if you have to up and run, you should have what you need ready to go and all vetted out. So that'll be that for this segment. This section focuses on the topic of discerning fact from fiction. I want to revisit this idea of discerning the truth from untruths. The world today is awash in information. The internet and the advent of mobile communications has changed the way that people live and communicate forever, or at least until an EMP takes us back 100 years, hopefully not. The way that we find information has changed so dramatically that most people do not have the slightest idea of its effects on their own life and the way we live at large. People have lost what already they had as a challenged ability to concentrate through distractions from text messages, emails, and incessant telephone calls. For those of us that are older, we remember the day when if you called someone at their home and they weren't there, the phone rang. That's what happened. That was it. Nothing more, nothing less. If they weren't there or they decided not to answer the phone, you either called back or you waited until you saw them. That was it. That was your only option. If you really needed to talk to someone, you went to them and had a face-to-face conversation. Then I remember getting my first answering machine recording device that had a reel-to-reel tape in it, and was rented at, I believe it was $6.95 a month from AT&T before the breakup. And it would go clunk, 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 clunk. Then I got a new one, and it had a cassette tape in it. It was awesome. And it had one for the answering message and one for the recording of the messages. And it got a half an hour, and that was all you got, and you did what you did. And when someone would call in on it, you would hear it go, clunk, 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 and it would answer with whatever the recorded message, and it would cut them off at a half of a minute. And now, people have one, sometimes more than one cell phone on them at all times. When someone wants to get them, even for the most inane reasons, boom, they're on the phone with them, the phone rings, there's no peace, there's no clear thought, there's no ability to ruminate upon the day's activities, or to plan, or to meditate, or God knows you can't even think to yourself, because the minute you do, the phone will ring, in most instances. The question that you have to ask yourself on the side of that is, while we have all this wonderful communication, how much of it is earth-shattering? How much of it would your life have changed if you did without it? But the overarching problem is, this means that the instant something happens, we know about it. Now, in a survival situation, that may be life and death, so that's great. On the other hand, if you've become dependent upon those means as your only input for sources of data, and that stops working, like when we had outages in the cell phone coverage after a derecho, or in New York City after Sandy, and along the east coast of the United States during Sandy, and in New York City and other areas that were hard struck, or 911, these communications means were totally interrupted. If you want to see how destructive it is when a whole organization is totally dependent upon one means of communication, look at the drama and disaster that resulted in the first few hours of 911's incidents, when the brand new communication system that had just been put in place for the police and fire and rescue in New York City, and its primary point for its antenna tower was on the top of the North Tower. And within minutes of the first incident, it was cut off, and they lost all their communication from the repeater and only were able to call back and forth on channels amongst themselves in limited distance and effectiveness. When you're in the city, that's a train wreck. This is a lesson that you learn from. Alternative means of communication, alternative means of gathering information. That could go back to what we did before, crystal radios. Sometimes, though, the overwhelming amount of information influx can be a double-edged sword. Like I said, it's very popular for people to say media is so bad now. In fact, the media has been bad for a really long time. The beauty of the advent of the internet is that with high-speed communications and data flow, you can fact-check that information in nearly real-time now from your phone in your hand wherever you stand. In addition, you can search historical resources to place the current claims in context. I never watch the news or TV ever, even TV shows, without constantly going to my phone and Googling something if I hear a word I haven't heard, or if I hear about something that I don't think is accurate in my recollection, and I go to check it to know whether I'm wrong or they were wrong, because this strengthens my knowledge base. As a seasoned trained interrogative interviewer, I learned to ask a few basic questions when analyzing a person's actions and words. Always begin by asking, what was their intent? Of course, sometimes determining that intent may be much more difficult than you wish, but with a little practice, you can get pretty good at it. The key is, two people can get the same end result, but their intent totally alters how you handle that problem. If someone drove down the street and they were angry and they saw people on the curb and they jumped the curb and ran over them and crashed into a pole, or if someone was driving along and someone smashed into them and caused them to careen off the road and smash into the people on that same corner and into the pole, it does not change the outcome. It does not change the result of the action, but it massively changes how you handle that in the aftermath. Are you directly focused on the injured and those who need help as a result of being hurt in it? Or do you need to put equal amount of time and effort into subduing the person who did the damage? If they did it on purpose, they may be trying to start the car back up and run over more people or get away. You have to know, or maybe they're going to jump out and do more physical damage in person. All of these things are critically important to know, be watching for, paying attention for. And the second part of it is to look at whether they're manipulating. Listen to the words. Listen to more than one sentence of the words. If it is something that they are telling you that goes along with things that agree with your basic ideals, do not make the mistake of accepting them out of hand without question, because you will get caught up and in trouble, because if you don't check and you're wrong, or they were wrong, and you run off on an angle, you have just at least damaged your credibility and your stance already. And more importantly, you could cause negative long-term effects to happen as a result of an inaccuracy. One of the most common things that people do when they get it wrong, when they present facts or things as facts that turn out not to be facts, is that they, and this goes to intent, you have some who look and go, if we only tell them this and take it out of context, maybe show some other story in a completely different setting before it to set the tone, and then cut right in with that story and that quote of that person, it will change the expected perception of what that person meant. Because you have lost the intent, you have lost the context, and context is critical. Every single thing that you do is based upon input that you take from the world around you. Listening to someone, hearing someone, they ask you something, they tell you something, they indicate to you you need this or want this. You watch the TV, and they indicate that something's happened and that you need to do this, but you must go the next step. Who are they? Where do they come from? What is their normal status? Do they agree with your perceptions? Perception is reality. Reality is perception. As humans, we have many means of obtaining, processing, testing, verifying, and vetting information. Human communication skills allow us, if we train ourselves, being careful and respectful, to attain a much higher level of understanding and awareness of our environment, and even some of us may become enlightened from it. The key to processing raw data reliably and effectively is to glean the raw data, log it, plot a course forward, and a process of vetting that information. That means someone just told you that this is going to make you grow hair. You go online and you look it up and you look at reviews on the product and you look. The other day, I saw the most awesome thing. I can't stand when I come to my front door at night. The bugs all gather around the light that's precariously perched within a foot of my front door. It means I bring in mosquitoes and flies every time I open the door at night. They had a product for $12.99 that they were advertising for $49.99 on one site. Ooh, we'll give you two for free. And then I found it for $12.99 somewhere else. And I go and look at it. It's an LED light bulb with a built-in bug zapper. So I thought, wow, that's a really great thing. They were selling it for two, basically, for $49.99. I found it for $12.99. Maybe I should get it. I went and read the reviews, and out of 400 and some reviews, they were almost all negative, saying it did not work. Oh, okay. Wrong angstrom light, didn't draw the bugs. I mean, you could have put a regular light in there and it would have drawn the bugs. And then the zapper didn't work. They were just all floating around and flying around it anyway and standing on it and nothing happened. Out it goes. This is the simple thing that you can do with every level of skill generally have a much better experience in life than those who have not. People say it all the time. I hear them say it constantly. I just don't understand why this happens to me all the time. I don't know. Maybe you should have gone and checked it out before you decided to give them your credit card or to say yes. The ability to be broad-minded, not stupid, but balanced enough to know that there's more than one way to do something right. Even if some are better than others, it can save you a lot of aggravation and broaden your skills and knowledge. What is comfortable and possible for you is not always the same for someone else. Having the skill to understand that there are many points of view that create differing assessments of the same scene depending upon a person's perspective is critical. On my website, and I'll put a link to it, I have a page under critical research skills on the second page that has an article about perspective. And on it, you'll see a picture. It's the same picture, and it looks like the house is tipping over. And then the picture is turned on an angle, and you see that the house is just on a really steep slope, and all the other houses are right next to it, and it's actually directly upright. Everything is a matter of perception. You have to be able to hold your emotion and responses. Your brain uses hints from images and the perceptions that you have in order to get it in your mind's eye to give you what you believe is reality. Merely turning on the light can change everything. Stripped of the proper context, everything looks different. Everything can be taken different. It's really critical. We see this every day in the news constantly. With our president, they'll report something that happened, one sentence that he said, take it completely out of context, and the whole thing turns into a disaster. When you put it into context, it becomes a non-starter. They do this to you. People do this all the time. Sometimes manipulation is as simple as getting you to watch TV or listen to a radio program. Often the facts, quote unquote, have been carefully selected and, though not tainted, they're placed in an order and focused specifically with the intent to cause you to act accordingly. Now the agenda could be as simple as moving you to eat McDonald's or Wendy's, or it could be to buy a product or a service. The advent of computers and other technology have increased the level of information saturation and the ease by which you can be bombarded by, quote, facts. It's really important. Those overload of facts can often cause people to feel overwhelmed and just give in. Don't give in. Take time. Step back, take a deep breath, count to 10, look at it, listen, look at the context, find it somewhere else. It's amazing. On YouTube, you can go find anything. Don't look at the ones that were from some other news thing. Look at the one that's the actual 1-hour-long presentation and go find it and listen to it in context. Listen to and see the film, the video of an accident from the start. When the incident happened in New York City recently, a suspect came through a traffic light, drove up through the curb, reversed down the road and drove on the sidewalk, running over people left and right, actually swerving to catch them as he went down at very high speeds for 3 blocks. In the reports that were on the news and the report back from the mayor of New York City, they said that it was just a guy who was drunk. But if you watched on the video of the surveillance video that was widely available on YouTube, you got a whole different picture of what exactly happened. Everything is a matter of context and perception. That's how we'll... And that, unfortunately, will be it for this edition of the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. I am your host, Will Hemingway. Thank you for spending your time with us today. Don't forget to click the links at the top of practicepreparedness.com to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and meetup.com. Until next time, please don't wait until it's too late. Live proactively, act with purpose every day, have a plan, and practice. because, as I always say, there is no disaster when you are prepared. We hope that you'll join us next time for the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. Have a good day.